Hey, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, September 18th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
You get the pole out of your keister, we're going to get along just fine.
I'm not sure I know what you're referring to. That internationally famous sexologist, sex educator, author, relationship expert, advice columnist, and television and radio personality, Dr. Yvonne Fulbright, is back with us today for part two of her turn on the Sex Wisdom Show. And that means I get to ask her all the questions I didn't get to last week. So yay for that. But wait, you didn't miss part one of this show, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 389, and voila. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
You don't want to sleep with me.
That's for sure. So be sure to check out Yvonne's site, cleverly named YvonneKFulbright.com. And once there, be sure to look for all of her books. And like last week, there will be links to her Facebook page and her Twitter feed in today's podcast posting on DrDickSexAdvice.com. But before we begin, a quick word from our sponsor, Spunk Lube. Spunk Lube wants to introduce you to their full line of personal lubricants, but they think you ought to pay special attention to their best-selling product, Spunk Hybrid. It's so unique, it looks and feels just like your own cum, don't you know? Spunk Hybrid is perfect for use with all your sex toys, even your expensive silicone toys. It's condom safe, cleans up easily, and is non-staining. In fact, it's the perfect mixture of water-based and silicon-based lube there is. Oh, and did I mention that it looks and feels just like your own spooge? But hey, don't take their word for it. Check out the rave reviews that the Dr. Dick review crew gave Spunk Lube. Mosey on over to DrDickSexToyReviews.com, use the search function in the header, type in Spunk Lube, and presto! The review is full of praise for the product, as well as numerous links to SpunkLube.com, where you can pick up your own supply. Do it now. That's SpunkLube.com. Okay, on with the show. Yvonne, thanks for coming back to DrDickSexAdvice.com for this second part of your conversation with us on the Sex Wisdom Show. I want to pick up exactly where we left off last week because I don't want to miss a beat, so to speak. You consider yourself a sex coach as opposed to a sex therapist. Why did you choose that one designation over the other?
Well, sex coach is actually an extension of sexuality educator.
Right.
One more way for people to, identify with me or work with me. I've always been at the prevention end of things. I think so many people would avoid therapy if they just got some basic knowledge, some guidance, some skills, and so forth. And that's not to say that the therapist work is not valuable. And I've flirted with the idea of getting the credentials to do that kind of thing. But right now, I just really enjoy helping people feel empowered with information.
Right. And, you know, it's true what you say, because a good portion of my therapeutic practice is basically education and permission giving. You know, like, you know, okay, here's some information that you may be missing in your life, and why not, you know, enjoy yourself, giving people permission to experiment and, you know, get some information about how their body works and responds, right, and then learning how to share that with other people. So it is, you know, educational for the most part. So let's talk a little bit about sexual performance concerns. Since most people who have performance concerns are in relationship, I suggest that we talk about how these concerns exhibit themselves for both women and men. But I hasten to add that this is not to suggest that this is only a heterosexual phenomenon. Mm-hmm. But let's start with a biggie, pre-orgasmia. Could you begin by giving us a working definition, and then we can talk about the impact this concern has on the sex lives of women?
Sure. Well, pre-orgasmia is typically captured as a situation where a female has never had an orgasm or reached climax in her life. There are women who can suffer from what's called secondary anorgasmia or orgasmia, but they've typically been able to come, and then for whatever reason later in life are not able to.
Right.
But pre-orgasmia has never reached climax.
Right. So how does this play itself out? At least from your point of view, in the lives of women and their partners?
Well,
I mean, obviously women are pressured, you know, to be orgasmic, and if they aren't, they learn how to fake the whole thing.
Right. Well, over the years, I've gotten a number of questions from people regarding a number of issues, and the two biggest themes are, am I normal? And then, how can I reach orgasm coming from the women, or the heterosexual guy saying, how can I help my wife, girlfriend, you know, reach orgasm? So people are really concerned about this issue, feeling very abnormal, whether it's the self or a partner who's not able to reach climax. And I always start by offering people kind of a checklist of the biopsychosocial issues going on. As you know, first recommending going to a healthcare provider to rule out any possible physiological reasons for the lack of response. Not only making sure, you know, that you're in good physical shape, but then also evaluating what kind of medications a person's on, you know.
Right.
Antidepressants can inhibit orgasmic response, or other medications like antihypertensives, even birth control pills.
That's
and
true.
Some women don't agree with sexual response. So that's one angle at which to approach it. If a physician can't find anything, quote unquote, wrong or troubleshoot things like medication, then we need to start looking at more psychological, social issues that could be impacting her responsiveness.
Right. You know, I've said this before on other shows, and you and I talked about it a little bit last week, about early messages that we get about sexuality, mm-hmm. particularly women in our society, that, you know, sex is wrong or dirty or less than, and, you know, that their body is, you know, icky in some sort of way, and then later on in their lives they get the message, well, say that for the one that you love. And then it's like, well, what?
Right. And then, yeah, the wedding night or the night thereafter is just a disaster because
right.
it doesn't come together the way religion or Hollywood sell us, you know, tell us it should. So a lot of people need to seriously examine their sexual hang-ups, including the sources for those. And that's why a lot of them do end up in therapy and should go to therapy if the lack of orgasmic response is due to issues around inhibitions or lack of presence, whether it's that they feel guilt, shame, embarrassment, confusion, or self-hatred
right.
for their reaction to sexual stimulation. A number of people also need to deal with issues around performance anxiety. So many women can feel so desperate to climax, you know, to feel adequate, to help their partners feel better about what's going on, or just honestly aren't enjoying the experience, or they just want to get it over with. And it's that pressure that doesn't allow for the orgasm to happen
right.
like it should.
Right.
And those are some of the issues, as well as one of the harder ones to deal with, helping a person realize that they're in a bad relationship. You know, if you can't trust each other, you resent each other, if there's violence in a relationship, then you know what? It's going to be hard to let go and come with that person. And it's one thing for an educator to tell somebody that, but I think to really start to evaluate healthy versus unhealthy relationships and patterns people can have in that, and, you know, why do you accept this kind of relationship for yourself? That needs to be worked on with a counselor, a therapist. Within either of those experts, being able to equip people with information and skills around issues like inadequate stimulation,
right.
you know, and just the fact that some people don't know how to turn themselves on, other people on, don't feel confident using toys, lubricants. So that's where some of the fun in dealing with this issue can be had.
Like if sex is painful, I mean, who wants to join in?
You know? Right. I realize maybe a couple drops of lube, like
aspirin. Exactly the point. And, you know, sometimes that is the only thing that's missing. And, but how would they know that without some information?
Right.
Statistically speaking, the most frequent sexual performance concern for men is premature ejaculation. This is not only a problem for the men who experience this, but also their partners. What kind of interventions do you suggest for people who may be challenged by this?
Well, one of my first ways of dealing with this, when a guy comes my way, wants coaching around this issue because he thinks he has PE, premature ejaculation, and I know a number of therapists and other coaches do this as well, is tell me what your definition of premature is.
I'm a huge proponent of masturbation, not only because of its being the most fundamental building block of all sexual expression, but it also gives us much more information about our own sexual response cycle. I know that you share this perception too, because I heard you talk to women about masturbating for their partner as a means of educating their partners about their unique sexual expression.
Yes, I think almost any sexuality educator, therapist, counselor will give the advice of, if you want better sex, want to be better in bed with your lover, start with yourself and explore your own body, and not to have it be just masturbating, but expanding that to self-pleasuring and all the different things in the universe and around you that can possibly turn you on, that you find erotic.
And the same goes for men masturbating for their female partners, because women are not necessarily all that clued in to the mechanics of male sexual response.
Right. A lot of women do need somebody to kind of teach her a little bit more hands-on, you know, give a demo.
Literally, figuratively.
Exactly. Have their own private show and tell. Not only is it a way to enhance the experience and bonding and intimacy, but it really does then allow her to see and learn what she needs to do to recreate that experience for you, while at the same time recognizing and letting her know it will be different from how you touch yourself,
right,
which the touch and the grip and the motion. And so, you know, he needs to be flexible in how he's going to react and what she's able to do. And she needs to allow herself to also accept the fact that she can't touch him in quite the same way, and that's perfectly fine.
Right. And then once a couple recognizes the distinction or the distinct way that they touch themselves, they can work to come to an agreeable way of touching one another. So it's expanding that sexual repertoire that involves couple play as opposed to just masturbation solo play.
Right. Yeah, it just changes things up, adds diversity to what you're used to doing together, and just a totally different way of sharing, which can be very special.
Okay, good. So let's talk a little bit about some sex trends in the popular culture. I think I know something that is of equal importance to us both, and that's the circumcision debate.
Yes, I am not a fan of circumcision. I am, originally from Iceland, and we don't circumcise our sons there, as do most countries in the world. It's only really popular in the U.S., and then a couple of major world religions do practice it. But most of the world isn't into it, and for a good reason.
Right, I think so too. I'm a firm believer in genital integrity, however, you know, if you want to, you know, mutilate yourself or adorn yourself or alter yourself at some point after you're an adult, that's your business.
Right.
But doing that to kids, I think is infants. In fact, is something that is just reprehensible, to my mind.
Well, I find it amazing that so many people get all worked up about the female genital mutilation issue.
Yes.
you know, female circumcision, but at the same time don't seem to think that it could be equally damaging to males and that we don't need to protect men, you know, males, boys, in the same way. For me, it's just really cruel, unusual punishment. With the mothers that I've gotten to know in the last few years, whether they're in their 20s or 30s, feeling like the pressure to circumcise their sons in this day and age is coming more from the dads than anybody. It's the whole thing of, I don't want him teased in the locker room. I want him to look just like I do.
Yes, right.
And, you know, sadly, people then in this country think it's freakish when a man or boy drops his pants and he's got a foreskin. It's like, what is that? What's that doing there? Or don't find it as attractive.
Right.
And I've often told my students over the years, when they see a picture of a penis with a foreskin for the first time, it's like, that's what most penises around the world look like. If you weren't used to seeing a circumcised penis, you would probably find this more attractive.
Right.
You might even find the circumcised penis less attractive looking.
Right.
It's all what you're used to. Same thing with guys and pubic hair. I've had men over the years have such a grossed out reaction to, you know, 1970s and early 80s educational clips. Women, you know, had the total bush going on.
Yes, I know.
Like, that's what most women look like when they don't maintain their pubic hair.
Right.
And that's perfectly normal, natural.
Right. And now guys are emulating that whole thing and, you know, shaving and waxing their bush. And it's just like, oh my goodness, to see, you know, an adult male without any bush is just like, it's odd to me. I mean, it's disturbing, in fact.
Well, it's like I heard Katie Couric tell somebody the other day on her show, it's just so prepubescent that that's what makes it disturbing. And that's what I would say it boils down to for me too. It's just something about, you know, getting pubic hair that's a marker that you're becoming an adult and a more sexual being. And that's something that should be a good thing, something you should be proud of.
Yes, I think so too. So another thing that is very popular in the culture these days is ED medications and herbal alternatives. That's erection dysfunction medications. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't typically comment on herbal alternatives because I don't have that medical expertise. I know nothing about them, and we actually don't know much about them. There's hardly any research on there. Out there. So,
a lot of them are adulterated with, you know, prescription medications, and people are unawares.
Mm-hmm. And it's used at your own risk, and definitely consult your doctor before using, especially if you're on medications already, as there can be some impact to what you need to take on a regular basis. You know, that said, though, I think ED medications can be really wonderful for a lot of individuals and couples if they're taken responsibly. I do warn, though, you know, young men, don't use it until you have to. There are a number who experiment, and then some actually end up needing to use it because they have trouble without it.
Right.
There's also the unsexy side effects, like fecal skin marks in your boxers or underwear. You know, that can happen, which is really not sexy. But I also warn men to not think they're resolving sex problems by popping a pill. Like,
right.
Consider that there are other issues impacting your erection, whether it's your relationship or psychological or emotional reactions to aging and performance. And just, you know, try to evaluate everything that's going on and then embrace the different stages of your life and the different ways you perform on a daily basis.
Because I see that in my practice. A lot of guys say, you know, well, you know, I don't fuck like I did when I was 18. And I say, well, and rightfully so. So
that might be a good thing. Because a lot of older men are much savvier and then better in bed, and they've learned to slow down and enjoy the moment and to connect with their partner. And that's why we've seen research out of Canada on optimal sex for people who've been together over 25 years and who are elderly individuals saying, I'm having the best sex of my life now. And it has not so much to do with erections, sexual response. It's about the different types of things that they're doing and the way they're connecting and enjoying each other and losing each other, losing themselves in the moment.
Right. How about the G-spot debate? Not that there is such a thing as a G-spot, because I do know that there's G-spot deniers out there, but the whole performance anxiety angle that sometimes women feel like, well, they are not achieving sexual fulfillment unless they have a G-spot orgasm?
Well, I always first tell people, if you want to discover where your G-spot is, don't just look for an X marks the spot in some picture in a sex book. You have to feel around a little bit. You know, we are told it's about 2 inches up on the vaginal canal, the front, stomach side. It can be as small as, your pinky fingernail to as big as like a $0.50 coin. But it's going to be in a slightly different location depending on the woman. She needs to be aroused first. You can't just poke around up there before getting her turned on or before turning on yourself. That said, not all women are going to find one. Not all lovers are going to find one. And that doesn't mean that she's defunct or that there's something wrong with her. It's just that that's not an erogenous zone for her. Just like not every person has erogenous nipples. There's great variability from person to person on that one. So I always tell people after, testing it out a few times and hopefully just having fun in the process, embrace your erogenous zones. Don't get hung up on whether or not you have a G-spot. You may actually find at another point in your life you do have one. Like some women report that after giving birth, their G-spot area came to life. So it's very individual, and for some, it's just simply a hot spot, and others, it's not.
Right. And you hit upon something that is so important to me, and that is play, sex play, fun, mm-hmm. fun. Most people who have problems about sexuality that find their way to my doorstep are working so hard at it that they're losing the fun aspect of it. And I try to get them to learn how to play again, like children play, where they get so involved in the play and, it actually takes them to the place where they are playing in their mind. We have lost that as adults, and I think our sexuality and our partnered sex in particular really suffer because of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in the few moments that we have left, let me ask you, who inspires you and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Well, I would say first and foremost, I'm still in awe with the professors I had at the University of Pennsylvania years ago, like
really?
Dr. Clayton and Connie McCaffrey. They were just all so inspirational advocates as well as educators, just really warm, brilliant people who just want to make this world a better place and have done so much important work over the years. I've also really been inspired by the work of my mentor in Iceland, who I did a postdoctoral fellowship with back in 2008, and her name is Dr. Solveig Bender, and she's basically Iceland's Margaret Sanger, a woman who's at the forefront of their sexual and reproductive health issues, mostly for young people over there, and that's access to care and access to contraceptives. And for the last 30, 40 years, she's been taking on the beast of the Ministry of Health as far as attending to sexuality, sexual health issues, and trying to create positive change.
Very cool. Very cool. It's wonderful when all these years later, I feel the same way about my mentors and, Wardell Pomeroy and Loretta Heroyan, Erwin Haberle. These people shaped me. They gave me an incredible education, and I'm eternally grateful to them.
Yes, and I think, with those of us who decide to work in the media and all the PR that's required from that, it's it can be easy for people to see how you're all about the self and not about the field that you come from. And I always try to use any opportunity I can to let people know, I stand on the shoulders of giants.
Exactly.
I wouldn't wasn't for the hard work of people before. And we just lost Virginia Johnson
days ago.
There could be a lot of criticisms made of the work she and her ex-husband did, but it's just remarkable for the times
exactly.
And how brave they were.
And on top of it, you know, when I was doing my doctoral studies in the late 70s and early 80s, there were very few women in the field. Virginia Johnson was one of them. Marion Fithian was another. Very few. And it was dominated by men, and men always got the top billing and blah, blah, blah. Nowadays, that's turned around, I'm happy to say, that you know, brilliant young women are ruling the area of human sexuality, and I couldn't be more pleased.
Yes.
Good, good, good. So with that, we must conclude again this week. Thank you so much for all of your precious time. We are richer for the experience. Before we go, would you give us your website address again? Walk us around. Tell us where we can buy your books.
Well, I can be found at YvonneKFulbright.com, and Astroglide.com is where I answer people's questions about sexuality and relationships. And people can buy my books at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, as well as other smaller booksellers.
And Facebook and Twitter, too, yes?
Yes, Dr. Yvonne K. Fulbright on Facebook is linked to my Twitter account.
Good, so. And I will have links to all of this in today's podcast posting. Again, thank you so much. We will be visiting you in cyberspace until we have an opportunity to chat again.
All right,
thanks, Yvonne.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Great show, huh? Well, that's it for today's X-Fans. Tune in next week at this same time for another Sex Wisdom show with a very special guest from Down Under. And more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
I just want you to know it makes me feel very scared to know that you're there.
No need to get all worked up, girl. But before we go, let me remind you that this week's podcast sponsor is Spunk Lube. Hurry on over to SpunkLube.com, look for their best-selling product, Spunk Hybrid. This is the famous lube that looks and feels just like your own jizz. But it's even better than your own jizz because it never gets sticky, nor will it stain clothes or bedding. This amazing hybrid of water-based and silicon-based lube is ideal for all guys out there who complain to me that you don't shoot much of a load, if any. Spunk Lube will help you overcome being self-conscious about that. Spunk Lube is condom compatible, and you can use it with all your favorite toys, even your expensive silicon toys. And you will love the packaging too. Drop everything and dash on over to SpunkLube.com. Pick up a load of fun for yourself. You'll be so glad you did. And remember, Spunk Hybrid is just one of their fine products. And when you visit, tell them Dr. Dick sent you. Until next week, remember, sex is good and good sex. Why, that's even better. Over and out.